Okay, all righty, folks. It is 1:30, and we are ready to begin.
Recording in progress.
Full board meeting of the Integrated Waste Management Authority. We will begin with. Well, this was the call to order. We begin with a roll call, please.
Good morning or good afternoon. Okay, let's start with Mr. Enns. He is going to be absent today. We do have his alternate. Mr. Burgess, were you able to get on the line, Mr. Burgess? Are you with us?
Yes, I'm on the line with you guys.
Wonderful. Right.
So thank you. Welcome, Mr. Burgess.
Welcome. Oh, thank you.
So we will mark Mr. Burgess as present. Mr. Hammond.
Here.
Mr. Heller.
Here.
Ms. Marks.
Here.
Mr. Newton.
Here.
Mr. Robert? Mr. Robert, are you with us today? I will check back on Mr. Robert. Mr. Storton?
Here.
And Mr. Burbo?
Here.
We do have a quorum.
All right, and you will look for Mr. Robert and make note of if he does arrive.
Correct.
Okay, all right, we'll proceed to the Pledge of Allegiance. Stand and join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
To the flag of the United States of America.
And to the Republic
for which it stands.
One nation
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Right, thank you. Someone should mute. Yeah. Okay. We will proceed to see if there is any public comment on matters not on the agenda.
Yeah, at this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I do not have anybody for public comment.
Seeing no public comment for items not on the agenda, our next item is a closed session to discuss public employment. Of an executive director pursuant to Government Code 54957B1. Let's see if we have, before we go into the closed session, let's see if we have any public comment regarding that item.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment on closed session item, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. And I do have one. Mr. Duffield, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Yes, thank you. I just was wondering if you had an estimated time for the closed session.
That's a good question. 15 minutes, 20. Is Mr. Avery going to join us?
I have not heard from Mr. Avery today, so
okay.
Unless he's on the line.
Okay. I would say 15 to 20 minutes. How we're going to do this closed session is we, the board members, are going to get an invitation to enter into a breakout room, which we will take. And so the meeting will kind of stay open and we will just reappear when the closed session. We will leave the breakout room, return to the main session when the closed session is complete. I would estimate 15 to 20 minutes. If it looks it's going to run a lot longer, we could try to let Barbara or Sasha know and they could make an announcement in the open session. So does that, hopefully that's helpful to you.
Perfect.
You have enough time to go have a snack. So, okay. So for board members, we're going to go ahead and enter into, I'm assuming there's no further public comment or questions regarding the closed session.
No, I don't have any more hands.
Okay. You'll know Pablo Ogren is leaving the room. In the room with me, obviously, is Jan Marks, and off to the right, Henry, our legal counsel. We're going to go ahead and join. For some of them probably already left this. Boy, that's bouncy. He's up there. Okay, we are back in main session. Barbara, it looks like, so anybody who was watching or waiting rather should be able to see us. And Pavo, is Pavo up there with you and can see that we've rejoined and he can come back down here?
He is on his way right now, and I'm just with Mr. Burgess is just still in the closed room, but he should be being kicked out right now. Oh, he's back in.
Okay. Got it. All right. So let's see here. Hold on. Let me get something off the screen. Okay. So we are back out of closed session. We have no reportable action from the closed session. We will be discussing related item as the last item on the agenda today, item number 12. So, but no reportable action from the closed session. So with that, we are ready to proceed to item five the consent calendar, I should say. Mr. Ogren is joining us. But before we turn it over to him, I want to see if there are any public comment on items on the consent calendar, that is items 5 through 9.
Okay, at this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment on items 5 through 9 on the consent agenda, you may press *9, or you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. And I am not seeing any hands for public comment.
Okay, then. All right. So we are ready to proceed on the consent agenda. Does any member of the board have any questions or would like to pull an item from the consent agenda?
Charles, this is Jeff Heller, Morro Bay. I'd like to pull item 9, please.
Item 9? Okay. We'll pull item 9 for discussion. Jan, did you have a comment?
I agree with Mr. Heller.
Okay. So Jan also would like to pull item 9. Any other questions or items to be pulled from board members?
And can we move approval of items 5 through 8?
Yes. Do we have a second? Okay,
so I'll second it.
John Hammond just did. Oh, so we have a motion by Jeff Heller, a second by John Hammond to approve consent agenda items 5 through 8. Let's go ahead and call the roll.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Enns is absent, and Mr. Burgess sitting in for Mr. Enns.
I should probably abstain because I wasn't there. Guess that's a question for Mr. Minnery.
Yes, that's understood.
Okay.
So Mr. Burgess will abstain from the consent.
Thank you. Ms. Marks?
Oh. Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Robert is still absent. I'm hoping to have him enter shortly, so we will mark him as absent from this vote. Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes. 6-1 absent, 1 abstained.
6-1-1, motion passes. We will move on to item number 9. Jeff or Jan, do you want to explain why you wanted to pull the item? And then we'll start with Jeff. You pulled it first.
Yeah, in looking at it, does this mean we will not have in-person meetings till May at the earliest? And looking at the dates?
I'm looking at the dates. Let's see, through the end. So the current governor's order expires at the end of March. So unless there's a change, we should be going back to in-person meetings at the end of March.
I'm having a hard time understanding you there, Jeff. Could you repeat that?
The current executive order expires at the end of March. So that's the order that suspends the Brown Act provisions that allows us to have these virtual meetings like this. So I would anticipate in April, your board moving back to meetings.
Okay, that's the clarification I was looking for. Thank you, Jeff.
If the resolution, I can see that it does go a little bit past that, but we'll just be mindful to make sure that we're not establishing virtual meetings if that's not permitted under the current rules.
Jan, your comment?
Yeah, thank you. I had the same question, but also if we do go back in person, it's my understanding that the city of San Luis Obispo is going to allow us to use the council chambers, which is just across the street. so that all of us can actually be in the same room at the same time.
This does bring up an interesting issue, though. We had a discussion at our city council meeting last night about this, that once the state of emergency is gone and we're not under AB 361 rules that allow us to have all virtual meetings or hybrid meetings, we will be under the standing Brown Act and public participation rules, which are changed a little bit from pre-pandemic, but still have a lot of pandemic requirements in them. And but I understand there is some greater latitude to have some members participate remotely than there was in the past. And I'm sure after 2 years that some of you, probably especially John Hammond and Keith Storton, probably appreciate not having to drive into San Luis Obispo, necessarily take a meeting. So I think the premise is that if the state of emergency ends, we have to follow whatever the rules are, which would be we have, in essence, a public meeting place. We have space for all board members. We have room for the public. But we can address whether or not the degree to which we can allow individual board members to participate remotely, which may also be dependent on technology, you know, the availability of technology, where we're meeting and staff-wise to handle that. So, but as of now, if the state of emergency ends, we will have to go back to meeting in person. So John, you have your hand raised, and then, or Sasha, did you have a comment first?
Yes, I just wanted to let you know that Mr. Robert is with us.
All right, thank you for letting us know that. Okay, John Hammond.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, Charles, again, I really appreciate seeing people's faces and reading the room, so to speak, if we're in person. But I sure hope that we still are able to do virtual, because in our area, we seem to have more audience, more public participation when they can get access to us virtually. I think it's an option for the state needs to think about in the future. Hopefully they'll make the right decision that we do have that option to continue. But again, we'll see how it goes. But for right now, yeah, it is pretty handy. I'm still here in the office working. So,
got it. Thank you, John. And well, with that, the item number 9 here before us today is simply re-ratifying that the current circumstances justify us continuing to meet remotely.
Okay. So I'd like to move approval of item 9.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. So a motion by Jan Marks, a second by Jeff Heller. Do we have any further discussion?
Public comment.
Any public comment? Since we pulled this item separately, do we have any public comment on item number 9?
At this time, a member of the public wishes to make a comment on item number 9. You may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I see nobody for public comment.
Okay, seeing no public comment, let's call the roll.
Ms. Marks.
Yes.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Again, Mr. Enns is absent. Mr. Burgess.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Newton.
Yes.
Mr. Robert.
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbo?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Thank you. With that, we will move on to the regular agenda, starting with item 10. We'll go ahead and have Mr. Minery begin this discussion, and then we'll allow public comment after board questions.
Okay. Thank you, President Barbeau, directors of the board. Without going through and repeating everything that is in my staff report, I think you're all aware that this was a long time coming. There was a lot of effort on behalf of the ad hoc committee since November, quite a lot of participation, not just from ad hoc committee members, but members of the local agencies also participated and were invited to provide comment and input throughout the process, which many of them did. The revised Second Amended and Restated Joint Powers Agreement is the culmination of those several months of effort. I will, other than the, what was it, 9 items that I kind of drew your attention to in the staff report, I'll briefly touch base on a few of the bigger items that I think warrant drawing your attention to. Of course, the first big change here compared to where your agency was before is the inclusion of 2 seats for the special districts, otherwise known as the authorized districts, whereas before you had 1. So the reason why, and you probably noticed when you read through the amendment, all the agencies, the cities and the authorized districts are together referred to as participating agencies. They have the rights and authorities. They all have the same rights and authorities under it. However, the cities themselves are part of what is considered to be a regional agency pursuant to the Public Resources Code. And so a regional agency is specifically defined to include counties and cities. And so that would preclude the 2 members of the authorized districts, or the board decided to go through with that governing structure, from being members of the regional agency. So this is crafted where the cities are the members of the regional agencies, and this document also serves as a memorandum of understanding with the authorized districts, allowing their participation in the governance of the agency, and allowing 2 seats from the authorized districts to represent all authorized districts members. The second big change worthwhile noting, because I know this was an issue in the majority, if not all, of the resolutions passed by the city member agencies, and it was the limitation on powers. So I'll draw your attention to section 7. This is page 14. And the express limitation is clear that the authority's power to adopt, impose, implement, or comply with regulations and ordinances is expressly limited to state mandated legislation and regulations related to solid waste recycling, organic waste, and waste diversion. And so that language was about as clear and specific as I think we could get to very clearly articulate what was a common theme in all the city ordinances in that regard. However, the second sentence of that same provision also does provide that all the existing IWMA ordinances, rules, and regulations, whether or not state mandated, would in fact remain in full force and effect. And I think the only real ordinance that is not state mandated but currently on the books is the polystyrene ordinance. This was a discussion point at the ad hoc committee, and this was the language agreed to by that committee. The final point that I'll just draw your attention to, other than what's in the staff report, is you'll notice a much more robust definition and provisions related to rates and fees. This is on section 13, page 25. And it goes into quite a bit of detail as to how rates and fees could be established by the IWMA board. And part of the ad hoc committee's discussions on this were to provide that the IWMA staff and that the agency would work to provide the participating agencies, the cities and the authorized districts, with the information that they would need to go through a 218 process if that's in fact what they think they need to do. That decision, of course, ultimately remains with the agencies, but the intent was to have the IWMA provide its participating agencies with as much information and work with the general managers in that regard. And then as kind of a follow-up companion, because the questions can always remain, how much is enough? If a city says we need more and the agency thinks they've provided enough, how do you work through those issues? How do you draw those lines? And so that led to the identification in the last part of the rates and fees section, which is that the requirement that the authority, the IWMA, will establish a rate and fee setting policy to help guide those types of discussions, not just in the JPA as a requirement, but as a policy issue for your board. And of course, the rate and CFED setting policy is the next item on your agenda today. So with that, I think I've said quite a bit. I'll stop and pause for any questions or comments from the board.
Does any member of the board have questions?
I have a question, Charles.
Go ahead.
Regarding Section 9 organization there, Jeff, where it talks about the amendment of the JPA, so the board composition will include one member from each incorporated city member and two representatives from the authorized districts. Yes. So I'm assuming that means one representative for each of the districts. Is that correct, the way I'm reading that? Or is it two representatives from each
district? Two representatives that would be the representatives for all authorized districts.
Which is two right now, right?
No, which is one.
You only have one. Right. One, historically, the agency has only had one representative for the authorized districts. Currently, it's Director Enns.
Right.
Recently, they went through the process with the local CSDA to approve an alternate, which is Mr. Burgess, who's on today.
Okay. All right.
So this would envision that there would be two board members seated for all special districts, and then two alternates. And we would allow, the way this is contemplated, is to allow the special districts to determine how to elect their special district representatives on their own without having those types of restrictions in the joint powers agreement.
Okay, great. Thank you for that clarification. That's all my.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Scott.
Yeah, I recall earlier part of the discussion regarding the second position for the CSDs was to create, an unequal number of votes. So we didn't have ties. Is that the correct reasoning for adding that position?
Not entirely. I mean, that was a factor mentioned by some folks. The other consideration is that collectively the CSDs represent more population than right around, they might even represent a little bit more than San Luis Obispo, our biggest city. So that in representing so many people, they were deserving of having two seats on this body. Also that there's a geographic, there's kind of a difference between the CSDs. They're geographically spread out. And we even talked about whether to have, have that those two reps split into like a north-south rep or a coastal and an inland rep. But we decided that it would be better to let the CSDs through their own selection process determine, what fair representation for them was. But the strongest point, I think, was simply that, they represent about 45,000 people. And if Los Osos were to become a participating agency, because the county, they are a special district with garbage authority, but the county, through some complicated stuff due to the whole sewer district bankruptcy, has retained that. They may, they could give it up at some point in time. Los Osos could become a participating agency, in which case the CSDs would actually outstrip by far even San Luis Obispo in number of people represented. So just felt that they were deserving, frankly, number-wise, of having the two seats.
Okay.
Yeah, if I could add to that. Yeah, I think also the request came from the CSDs, that they wanted more more representation. So I think that it makes sense myself.
Yeah.
President Barbeau, if I might just make a clarification that I do know that Los Osos is in fact retaking back their garbage authority. And so they're already in works for making that happen with it, I would say within the next few months.
To clarify a little bit better, it will be in April based on the CSDs and the board's actions.
Great.
Okay. And the board, you mean by the Board of Supervisors' actions? Yeah, the Board of Supervisors have to approve that. And so point being, they would have 60,000 people, which is far more than any one of us. And that they would be deserving of that level of representation. I originally thought that this might be a contentious thing, but in the, you know, in the committee, and I thought somewhere along the line it was brought up in a board meeting as well, and didn't sense that there was, you know, particular reluctance on the part of cities, but you might, you know, have a different opinion on that.
Well, I mean, be quite blunt, it also conflicts with the resolution that the city of Pismo adopted, because, you know, I was authorized to vote in favor for removing the five county supervisors, but I wasn't authorized to add anyone. So that's it's a direct conflict with the resolution we passed. So that's why I bring that up. I don't know how it compares to the other resolutions passed by the other cities, but I do question if anybody was actually given the power to support it with adding a seat.
Well, I don't think that anybody needed to specifically be given the power. I mean, in theory, a given city could say, hey, we really hate this idea, and that would present an issue. And I don't know how the rest of your council feels about mm-hmm. it. I think I've explained kind of how we arrived at this particular reasoning, if you will, for it being there. And it would, I mean, it could be an issue if a city really took issue and didn't like it.
Okay.
Well, just to clarify the process, and Mr. Minery, I don't know if you want to, it's my understanding that our board can pass this, but then it has to go to each of the cities and be ratified by the city council. So your city will definitely have an opportunity to utilize that discretion and make that decision when it comes before them.
Right.
Yes. The IWMA is not a signatory of this joint powers agreement. This is an agreement among the agencies. Right. So it will go back to all of your boards. And so you're essentially, your agency today is almost approving it as to form and as to effect and proving it to go to the local agencies.
Right. I mean, in effect, this body, since, you know, we represent our cities, is essentially collectively saying, hey, you know, gone through this process, this is a recommended revision to the JPA. If a city, a given city, you know, declines to ratify it, and ratify may not be the exact proper word, but then we definitely have an issue, because under the current terms of the JPA, amendments need to be unanimous.
Correct.
So Scott, I understand what you're expressing, but if what you're expressing is the opinion of the majority of the Pismo Beach City Council, it definitely, would say, hey, we might have to go back to the drawing board.
Right. Okay. And one more question regarding the mandates only portion. And maybe this is a question for Mr. Minery. Would you consider mandates only also meaning that includes measures, that we limit the measures to implement those mandates?
Well, I think that is an interesting question, because the JPA itself is restrictive and restricting you to imposing, adopting, and implementing rules and regulations. I think the measures about how you go about achieving that is almost an interpretation of the document that would be part of board policy. So I think measures tend to be more of a policy decision that your board will be making from time to time as you move forward on those state mandates.
I think it would also be, though, an indication of, the state passes a new law next year. It's mandated. We have to do, maybe it might even say you, the city, have to do an ordinance, like we all have to do 1383 ordinances. It would be somewhat subject to interpretation as what is compliant with that state mandate. And it would be, that's always going to be ultimately to some degree a matter of interpretation. And so it's kind of like there, you have to have an education component to comply with 1383. What does that mean? You can't, I don't think you can define that in the JPA. You can only define that through discussion. And yeah, there would be some room for disagreement, I suppose, as to wait, you're going too far. This, the state mandate doesn't mean you have to do all this, but that's going to be a policy discussion.
Okay. I just bring it because my concern is that we do only implement, you know, the measures that are needed to comply. But thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Is that all?
Hello. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Burgess, I do have Mr. Hammond had his hand raised. I can't see your hand raised, so I don't know if you were ahead of John or not. I'm going to go ahead and let John.
Go ahead and let him speak.
And then go
to let him speak.
Okay, John?
Thank you, Charles. I was just going to address Scott a little bit. A big reason that we wanted to have a second CSD or special district was that we had an even number of members. We need to have an odd number to break ties and such. So now we have 9 if we do this. I was a little taken aback about the fact that, you know, we didn't decide or didn't ask for a south, north, or east, west kind of a consideration from the CSDs, but that's up to them essentially. I think, again, Charles, you know, his testimony, of course, is that they have a lot of members that CSDs put together, have a lot of residents that need to have a voice. And so I think that's super important to have at least 2. Now with more or Los Osos coming in, that will be more important too. So I think, again, Paso is very, very happy with the revision of the JPA. You know, it took away the supermajority provision. That was always a problem on certain votes. We also have also written notice where each member can leave after 6 months, much easier to disconnect if we have a problem that way. So again, in general, I think it's a good JPA. It's been a long time coming. Spoke with Jeff Minery years ago about this, that we needed to go over it and revise it. Now it's here. So I'm happy with the document. So is Pat Robles. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, John. Let's go to Mr. Burgess, followed by Keith Storton.
Hi. Hi, thank you for hearing me. So addressing number 3, section 4 about the authorized districts, I am in support of a north and south. And the reason being is because after being with the CSD for 16 years, the actual voting of this and the people that participate in the voting, sometimes some districts don't participate. And I'd hate to see a majority go to one side of the county. So that's actually all I've got to say about that. I'm glad to be here today. And the other thing I'd like to say is if in the next meeting, since I am an alternate, that I am included in the executive session, so I don't come in blind. I'm not sure if that's allowable.
When you say executive session, do you mean the executive committee, or are you referring to like if we have a closed session, which
closed session? I'm sorry.
Okay, were you not in the closed session?
Yeah, I was on this one, but okay. It seems like if I go into another meeting, I get out. I'm not allowed in, and so I feel like
I'm
okay. Yeah,
he wants clarification.
Yeah, you certainly, you know, if you're representing the CSDs that day, you certainly are entitled to be in the closed session, and it may be just a technological thing we need to work out.
Exactly, but when it comes to being able to vote on the stuff, I was like, okay, well, I didn't get to hear because I'm not allowed in. Even like when I attended other meetings and Mr. Enns was there, so I'm not sure what. That, I guess it's a question for Jeff Minery.
Yeah, if you're in a meeting and Mr. Enns is present, I don't know that the same would apply.
I understand.
Yeah.
I was just clarifying.
Because I mean, you're always welcome to attend the meeting itself. But if Mr. Enns is present, he would, you know, enter the closed session and such. So,
okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Keith Storton.
Great. Thank you, Charles. Yeah, I actually had heard informally that perhaps there may be members or two that aren't comfortable with the 2 representation from our authorized districts. I'm completely fine with it and don't have a problem with it. And it's something we've discussed over the last 4 to 5 months. And today we're kind of at that last hour, and we've had many open meetings to where this item could have been discussed and brought out further and address the issue. But I'm hoping that if there are some concerns, that we try to solve them as much as we can today. If this goes from here and we come back and we find a city or two does not approve, I think we're delaying our process that much more. We've all put a lot of work into the JPA, and I think each agency has had the opportunity to be involved and provide feedback. And I'm hoping if there's something there that I'm missing that we need to discuss, that it's addressed so we can deal with it in a timely manner.
All right, thank you, Keith. Any other comments, questions from board members? Okay, if not, then the issue here is, you know, we essentially are, I don't know if we're recommending or what have you, but we're putting this, yeah, good point, Jan. Actually, let's first see if we have any public comment regarding the JPA amendment.
If at this time a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button down at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I have no one for public comment.
Okay, we'll bring that back to the board. And the recommended action is to adopt the resolution that approves the Second Amendment to the Joint Powers Agreement, and then, in effect, then refers it to the member jurisdictions and participating agencies for ratification.
Charles? So,
yes, John?
I'll go ahead and make a motion if you're ready.
Oh, wait.
Hold on. Hang on. Thanks, John, but hang on.
I wanted to recognize real quickly that we did late yesterday get a few comments from Napomo Community Services District. Legal counsel and I looked at them, and we'll be following up with Napomo regarding some of the comments that relate to the public resources code and why the language is in there. But we thought it might also be advisable in the action to allow the board president, in working with legal counsel and the interim executive director, to make some minor non-substantive changes, because some of the edits that were recommended, they looked good, but they were not substantive. And it's pretty common for documents such as this to go through a little bit of sort of post-approval edit on non-substantive changes. That's simply to recognize the correspondence that came in from Napomo last night.
So you're talking about corrections, like what, you know, whether they be commas or a change in word that's more appropriate.
Correct. Clarification more than anything.
Okay. Okay, with that in mind, John, if you'd like to make a motion.
Okay, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion then to adopt 2022-0302, approving a second amended and restated joint powers agreement for the Integrated Waste Management Authority.
And allowing, the legal counsel, interim executive director, and president to make any minor non-substantive edits?
That's included, yes.
Okay. This is Keith, I'll second.
Okay, had a second from Jan first, so thank you, Keith. Okay, so we have a motion by John Hamm and a second by Jan Marks. Do we have any discussion of the motion? If not, let's go ahead and call the roll.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Let's go. They're going at each other a little bit.
Oh, somebody needs to mute.
I think we are muted. Okay, so Mr. Hammond, that was a yes. Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Enns is out. Mr. Burgess?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
No.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Thornton?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 7 yes, 1 no.
Okay, thank you. And when do we expect, so our members can advise their city managers / council, or maybe Pablo will advise city managers, but we need to do this quickly with Napomo, and then when will this be in the hands of the cities for their council meetings and CSDs?
End of the week. Yeah, end of the week.
Oh, really? That quickly? Okay. So, got it. So this will, you know, you will be seeing this coming forward to you in your city council and CSD meetings. So,
and if I might, I think that what I'll do also is reach out to the city of Pismo Beach, because in moving forward on that city council agenda, I think I'd ideally be the first to move, so we can see how the city of Pismo Beach chooses to act.
Okay. All right, then we are ready to move on to item 11, which is review and consider SB 1383 action plan, adopt the rate resolution, and the fee setting policy. So we'll turn that over, I believe, to Paavo.
Correct. Today's item recommending final action by your board on amending the IWMA fees also includes two related actions, which have been prepared for board consideration based on comments from representatives, primarily staff, of IWMA participating agencies. And those two related actions are a fee setting policy, which legal counsel touched on in the prior agenda item, and also an SB 1383 action plan. And I want to take these in different components to allow board members to ask questions and give me the opportunity to respond sort of one at a time. The fee setting policy itself is recommendation is to adopt by resolution, and it helps to address questions regarding Proposition 218 that were posed by staff of the participating agencies. It addresses the new language in the JPA that your board just reviewed, and it provides for better coordination with participating agencies. As mentioned in the staff report, the development of the fee setting policy has been coordinated with the participating agencies through a subgroup of three representing Paso, Arroyo Grande, and San Luis Obispo, whose input was included in the draft policy provided in your board's February agenda. And then subsequently, we circulated the document to all the additional agencies for additional comments. We did receive some additional subsequent comments. They are in two categories, non-substantive, but very much appreciated edits of the nature that a talented editor would provide and did so. And I always love getting, you know, edits from somebody who's a talented editor. And then a comment from one of the city managers that the administrative requirements to coordinate with the participating agencies on fee increases sounded a tinge too much like the agencies needed to align with IWMA. And a brief conversation, and I agreed, and so then inserted the language in terms of coordination on fee setting, that the goal, including, quote, the goal that IWMA fee modifications are scheduled to coordinate with normal reoccurring fee processes conducted by participating agencies. Because we know that with solid waste management fees, there's a baseline evaluation, and then we have this potential, you know, couple of years, but periodically and reoccurring, there's the more extensive effort that all of the participating agencies go through, or many of them go through. And so this revision is simply reflecting the goal that IWMA itself tries to line up our fee setting processes with those that the participating agencies regularly go through. In summary, the fee setting policy includes categories on sections on authority to set fee setting objectives and determinations, the data required to support fee determinations, fee monitoring, and then the administrative requirements. And in addition to addressing the JPA, we feel that this helps to address, although IWMA itself is not required to go through Proposition 218 procedures, we don't want to act inconsistent with Prop 218. We want to substantiate recommendations similar to how they would be substantiated in Prop 218 and reduce the risks of litigation to the participating agencies, as well as provide them better defensibility in case there is any litigation. And so with that, those conclude my remarks with respect to the fee setting policy, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
And the fee setting policy, as noted in the previous item's discussion, is part of trying to accommodate the concerns expressed by some of those city managers, you know, that the JPA include consideration of their needs when it comes to 218 issues. So there's really three elements of this particular agenda item. I don't know, I think it requires three separate actions. You know, adopt the resolution establishing the fee setting policy, then to adopt the SB 1383 action plan, and then finally to adopt the hauler fee rate increase. Are you going to talk separately about those two other items? Do you want us to talk first about this one?
Yeah, I'll talk separately about the other two. I just wanted to make sure to pause and give a opportunity for questions and answers on fee setting.
Okay, so let's see. Are there any board questions regarding the fee setting policy? It's good because it has been explained before. So thank you, everybody. Okay, so with that, rather than, you know, vote on this separately, because then we'd have to take a separate public comment. We'll vote all on all of them at the end. Okay, go ahead.
Then with respect to the SB 1383 action plan, the recommendation is to adopt. The joint powers agreement also addresses plans in section 6 and 13. And speaks to adopting and implementing plans. Adopting the plan supports the fee resolution by providing the what in terms of what we're gonna, the fees are gonna be used for. And as I previously mentioned, although IWA is not specifically subject to Proposition 218, the staff of the participating agencies have discussed challenges in their efforts at the city and the special district level that they could be problematic without a full IWMA package, including an action plan. And so this was specifically brought up during my meetings with the subgroup. I think important points with the action plan, remember, is that we should anticipate that it will be modified as implementation and startup efforts continue. For example, in discussions that we've had, staff has had with the board, we anticipate metrics and performance measurements to be included in requests for proposals and contracts with independent contractors. And those are details that have not been yet developed. And then also another example of details is with respect to coordinating inspections and enforcement actions, because at a staff level, we have more work to do in order to coordinate with all the participating agencies on how far does IWMA staff and independent contractors go on compliance reviews and in monitoring? And if we identify a constituent that is not in compliance, what work do we do at IWMA's level to help bring them into compliance? And then at what point do we have to turn the matter over to the participating agencies for potential enforcement action? So our understanding from the board is very clear that IWMA itself is not going to be doing enforcement actions. And it's similar on waivers, where any waiver determinations by IWMA are still subject to appeal to the participating agencies. But this action plan itself is a broader based action plan in order to help provide substantiation for the fee setting. And yet we know there's still a lot of details and work that still needs to be addressed. In summary, the SB 1383 action plan is presented for the board adoption to help substantiate the need for the fees, to help reduce the likelihood of Prop 218 challenges, to improve defense in the event that Prop 218 challenges do arise. It reflects the county withdrawal and to provide a working, sometimes called a living document, to incorporate details of program management as we move forward. And those conclude my comments, and I'd be glad to answer any questions with regard to the SB 1383 action plan.
This product emanated from our original contract with HF&H back, I think, beginning in 2019, for them to help arrive at this. So most of this is from their original draft. You're saying it's been updated to incorporate the county's departure.
Yes.
But I mean, this was what we originally paid HF&H to
to do.
Yes, and so, and Kelly York did most of the work from staff side to work with HFNH on the updates. You'll notice that some things in there that we still showed the original schedule for many tasks, and even though implementation efforts have been delayed, we make sure in the preamble to speak to COVID and other issues that have delayed it. Very important documents that in case any of the participating agencies are challenged by CalRecycle on implementation, that we make sure to include those references in there. Some of the agencies have adopted the notice of intent to comply, SB 16619. Others have not, but in any case, we wanted to also make sure that the document was good to help with CalRecycle challenges if some of them have come forward.
Ms. CalRecycle has reviewed this document already. They have not?
No.
I thought there were at least discussions with them.
No, our work effort with CalRecycle has really been with regard to the JPA, and in order to make sure that we maintain the regional agency. Unlike AB 939, where our plan document is the driver behind what we have to do, the SB 1383 action plan is not that same kind of a document. Because SB 1383 is much more prescriptive on what we have to do as compared to AB 939, for example.
Okay, I thought this was kind of coordinated with them though, so that we could feel comfortable or confident that it met the requirements of SB 1383 in the eyes of CalRecycle, so that, you know, they wouldn't get this and go, oh, well, you know, you need to add this or you need to do that or whatever.
No, I think that's the contract. And there, you know, and Patty, I'm not sure if there was earlier discussions with SB 1383 action plan in CalRecycle. But again, my understanding is the contrast is SB 1383 is prescriptive in its nature of what we need to do. And therefore, CalRecycle does not rely on an action plan like they did when the AB 939 integrated waste management plan was adopted.
Okay. And so as you noted, the key relevance of this plan is partially to support the basis. These are all things we're going to do. This is why we need more money. This is why we need a fee increase. And this is intended to be supportive, for the cities or anybody else who feel a need to justify the rate increase.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions regarding the SB 1383 action plan? Mr. Heller.
Thank you, sir. So in looking at this, I'm glad you brought this up, Pavel, because this is kind of an issue that I'm most confused about, to be honest. So I understand that IWMA is not going to be an enforcement agency, but it sounds like that you will be doing some monitoring. You have a $300,000 estimate for route reviews, contamination monitoring, and other compliance efforts. So where I am confused is, what compliance efforts will IWMA be making versus compliance efforts that the city has to make?
Alva, okay. Would you like me to jump in on that?
Yes, Patty, that would be great, because let me just preface it really quickly that IWMA's role in monitoring is really the foremost. It's when we think we run into violations that we have to share the information with the participating agencies. And then it's the participating agencies that make determinations on whether they're going to issue a notice of violation and start taking the actual enforcement action. SB 1383 is the first time that the state has pushed those enforcement responsibilities to the local level. So that's just a couple of clarifying. Patty can get into some of the more details about monitoring and what the compliance requirements are under 1383.
Yes, Mr. Heller, and for the rest of the board, most of that is going to be actually with the field team, the IWMA field team, out in the field, lifting lids, checking for contamination. This is required by SB 1383 or CalRecycle. Once we do, if we do find contamination, it'll be putting notification tags on the containers to help educate the public on what goes in what containers or what was not properly put or sorted in the container that they're actually looking at. In addition, that data has to be collected, photo documented, and pumped back into our Recyclers platform grid. That data in turn is sent to CalRecycle every year in our annual report. So it's a lot of team members on the ground, lifting lids, photo documenting, putting it into the platform, and then sending that information to CalRecycle.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you for that, Patty. The compliance then in terms of ensuring that the containers are distributed to everybody by the haulers and that the stickers that need to be distributed by the haulers is taking place, is that task on the participating agencies?
No, it initially it's really on the IWMA. We work closely with the haulers as well as the cities and special districts on how many folks have containers, how many people have waivers, who's still needs to be reached out and touched, who needs to have a waiver put up or whatever. So we're still in the process of working through those. It's not at a city level yet, and it won't be for a couple of years.
Hmm.
That's the benefit of the IWMA. We do all the heavy lifting with the help of Science Discovery in advance so that hopefully in the end, cities and special districts will not be faced with the challenges of having to enforce.
So it'll be 2 years before you can ensure that the stickers have been distributed and everyone has a green waste can, et cetera?
No, not necessarily that long at all. What I mean by that is we're going to have people out there who repeatedly will have to go visit. For whatever reason, they'll refuse to comply. So that's different from stickers, and that's different from containers hitting the ground. But we will have some people who will need multiple, outreach and education.
So what are the participating agencies' responsibilities relative to compliance?
Well, if a business or resident or hauler, depending on the location and whether the entity has a waiver or not, it varies. And so I'd be happy to talk to you individually about, say, for example, the city of Morro Bay, and we could give you, dial it in for your location and what you're responsible for.
That would be helpful because I'm not completely clear what our responsibility is with respect to compliance. I get the fact that IWMA is not an enforcement agency, but compliance is always kind of a big question mark for me. So the more that can be clarified, the more helpful that will be. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And to be honest with you, you're very different from somebody like San Miguel, some of the special districts, or even some of the larger cities. So again, I'd be happy to work with you and, of course, Janine and your whole Morro Bay team one-on-one on that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think the key thing that, and Patty mentioned this, is that this is the value of the IWMA, because technically each of our jurisdictions is responsible for this compliance and these compliance actions. But we're in our 1383 ordinances, we're essentially saying we can have a designee do that, the compliance part, not the enforcement part. But so that's why the IWMA, so that our jurisdictions don't have to go out and hire somebody to do it. You know, they're going to be flipping lids, doing the inspection programs, following up with the haulers, make sure all the labeling and all of that kind of stuff happens, so that our cities don't have to do that. And that's where the value of the IWMA comes in. It's just where the line stops is the IWMA can't write out a ticket. They can't write out a notice of violation and fine somebody $100 or whatever it is, you know, your city wants it to be. And that's where they're going to finally get to the point. Somebody doesn't comply. The IWMA is going to turn it over to the jurisdiction and say, here, this person's not complying. Enforcement is the jurisdiction, purview.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, Jan had a comment.
Yeah. I also would like to say that this is really brand new. And so CalRecycle will most likely be handing out regulations in the future that will lay out the process for the jurisdictions. It's just that it's being rolled out somewhat slowly. And so this is a brand new thing. So stay tuned is basically.
Yeah. Well, and along those lines, when Patty mentioned 2 years, it's not till January 1st, 2024 that CalRecycle, under their provisions for enforcement, you would actually get to the point of citing or fining somebody. Until then, it's warnings and that sort of
stuff. Yeah, I was hoping, Patty, you might be able to speak a little bit more to the 2024 deadlines relating to enforcement.
Sorry about that. It took me a while to turn on my microphone and camera. Yeah, and again, it, as you both alluded to, there is that deadline for enforcement, and that's why it's so important for the IWMA science discovery team to be out there in advance to give folks, whether you're a business, multifamily complex, or resident, chance to get up to speed on this new regulation. And again, the idea is, you know, keep our fingers crossed that we, this team does a good job, that we can get out there to everybody and talk everybody into changing their behaviors and getting the organics from the, basically from the gray can into the green can.
And then, okay, so this has the 2024 and what we've been talking about in general here is working with our constituents on complying with SB 1383. I don't want to lose sight, though, is that there's earlier deadlines for the public agencies themselves. Most all of the participating agencies have adopted their SB 1383 ordinance. There's some that are in process, and then a couple of the special districts are scheduling them right now, updating the franchise agreements. And I also believe that most recently, CalRecycle has added like the green carts to the early programs, Patty. Maybe you can speak to that. Or maybe
Green
Cali.
Green cards to the early programs?
I think Kelly might have been speaking the other day to me about, in addition to ordinances and franchise agreements, we have to make sure to get some of this organic, the outside carts for organic recycling to some of the commercial and multifamily residences sooner, much sooner than 2024.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. Yes. Yes. Spot on.
And this sort of relates to Vice President Marks's comments on CalCycle's regulations that they have been coming out. We have seen some recent changes from CalRecycle and that overall implementation and enforcement has got multiple milestones associated with them. Most pressing are the requirements on the public agencies. And then 2024 starts talking about some of the other requirements associated with our constituents.
Yes, and in fact, April 1st, we have our first initial compliance report with CalRecycle. So if one of the member agencies has delegated to the IWMA that they want us to do the reporting for them, we'll be turning that report in for your agency. So more on that to come. And then of course, we just got released the annual report, the framework for it. If I'm not mistaken, it's like 19, 20 pages of extra documentation. And I'd be happy to share that with this board or anybody from the public who'd like to take a look at it. You'll see it's really in depth and has a lot of questions that we need to answer.
All right, thank you, Patty. Does any other board member have any other questions regarding the ESB 1383 action plan?
No, this is what I was referring to.
Yeah. It's monitoring. Yeah. Okay, if no further questions, then I believe we can go on to the third item, which is the actual rate resolution.
Yes, and this one, Barbara is going to help me share a couple of exhibits that are included in the agenda materials. The resolution itself incorporates by reference the HF and HD analysis and the SB 1383 action plan. And really the final part of the presentation or my discussion today is regarding my analysis of the fee recommendations. Essentially, there are three reasons for the fee increase. One is SB 1383 regulatory costs. Two is structural deficits that originated prior to SB 1383 implementation efforts. And then the capital outlay and board adopted reserve requirements. And so four different exhibits or schedules that I want to review. Chronology of key milestones. I looked at this because I wanted to go back in history somewhat to gain an understanding of how we got to where we're at today, the sequence of events leading up to these recommendations. The very first item is in January of 21, so that's just over a year ago, of a fee revenue review by R3 Consulting Group. And what they did is they had done a review of fees, worked with the haulers to say, were the haulers paying the fees that they were supposed to be paying? Were the landfills paying the fees, tipping fees that they were supposed to be paying? And the review sort of said that there was some inconsistencies, but didn't really identify any haulers or landfills that had needed to pay us more money. Instead, what they did is they identified the particular fee, the specific fee, which is 30 cents per month for customers who paid less than $50 a month. That's the IWMA fee. Separately, all businesses were paying a 2% and other residentials were paying 2%. And then tipping fees are separate. And I'm really not going to talk about tipping fees today so much because those are not recommended to change anymore. Those are based on an agreement with the county. And we've been signaled pretty clearly that the county's not interested in modifying the tipping fees. But in any case, the R3 Consulting Group review came back and recommended the elimination of this 30 cents per month for customer bills that are less than $50. And that if that was eliminated and everybody paid the 2%, it would generate an extra $360,000 per year. And one of the reasons why I want to make sure to speak to this particular item is it's again reflective on some of the other comments that I've made, which is that IWMA doesn't really want to take action that is in conflict with Proposition 218, even though we don't see ourselves as being directly requiring to comply with 218. 218 is property-related fees. These fees are against the haulers. But to the extent that they may get passed, most likely will get passed on, again, we don't want to do anything that's inconsistent. The R3 Consulting Group specifically spoke to the fact that this particular factor on the 30 cents per month was inconsistently collected. I support the recommendation for elimination of this because, or that it be rescinded, because it does, in my opinion, conflict with Prop 218. It's not consistent with Prop 218. Prop 218 does not allow us to do subsidies, and it just certainly has that sense that it's a subsidy for low income. It's really hard to justify why this should move forward. And so you have our three recommendations to rescind the fee. And I also the HFNH fee analysis from January also recommends it. And I think it's a good idea as well, because there is certainly the argument that that would be inconsistent with Prop 218. Moving forward from there, then, it was around this time last year that HFNH drafted the SB 1383 action plan, the one that we just discussed. But the cost estimates at that time were, the low-end cost estimates were around $630,000 a year. And this sort of jumped out at me as being starkly contrasting with what came forward to your board in June of 21 on the budget and fee recommendations, which included cost estimates for SB 1383 of about $1.5 million. Now, in going back, and Barbara helped me research this, certainly the prior executive director had been between February and June on the board's agenda with PowerPoint presentations on multiple occasions in order to talk about how the $1.5 million was developed. So it was not done in the absence of board review, but to me it illustrates that as the consultants and the staff were looking at SB 1383 implementation and I assume getting a better handle on where CalRecycle was going, that they recognized that this implementation was going to be significant. So we're at $1.5 million in June of 21. And that in from that 1.53 million, you'll see that in some of the subsequent slides as well. Noteworthy, on November 21, the county withdrew. The rough estimate is about $140,000. I should mention, to clarify real quick, that this particular chart is an analysis of approximations. You'll notice that there's, you know, a whole bunch of zeros at the end of all of these numbers. It's not like a budget where we often see more detail. These are big picture approximations of what we're looking at. But the county's withdrawal in November of 21 generally estimated about 6% of total revenues. And then January of 22 is where your board was presented the HF&H fee report, the 5.4%, which is in front of you today in the resolution, that was going to be generating about $2.1 million in additional revenues per year. And then what I did is, by looking at all the information, I broke that out into three different components. About 1.2 million, it's actually a little bit less than that, but for round numbers, 1.2 million associated with SB 1383 implementation, which is notably down from the 1.53 that was included in your current year budget. And then for prior program deficits, about 475,000. For capital outlay and reserves, about 435,000 per year. So the rate increase that you're looking at right now, today, is about 60% relating to SB 1383, about 20% relating to prior program deficits, and about 20% the need to fund some capital outlay and to replenish reserves. A real big picture again. So Barbara, if you could go to Exhibit A, because this is Exhibit A is where then I drill into the SB 1383 costs in more detail. Thank you. So what I wanted to do here is to compare SB 1383 expenditures between the June of 21 fee proposal and the budget actions that your board took to what HF&H provided in January. And the salary and benefit numbers are essentially comparable. There's a little bit, you know, for cost of living adjustments in the HF&H numbers. But those are the three staff positions that your board has approved. And that's all pretty consistent. Then I wanted to jump down to monitoring and education, reporting and data management. Because down here we see some, you know, relatively smaller cutbacks in estimates. And Director Heller had mentioned already that out of the monitoring and education, about 300,000 of it is monitoring and the other 79,000 is education. So with respect to educational efforts for SB 1383 costs, they really don't, it's not like prior programs, where prior programs we have these extensive classroom education programs. Certainly whatever classroom education programs that move forward are going to also capture some of, you know, the current requirements or educate on current requirements. But in terms of new costs, it's really that monitoring effort, which is the biggest chunk of it. And then the regulations require us to educate when we find contamination or other types of problems. And I think the board has previously expressed the desire for education over enforcement. But again, that's part of SB 1383. So on these categories, monitoring and education was previously described as education and monitoring. I wanted to flip it around because monitoring is really the preponderance of the cost. But again, on these two line items, the HF&H fee analysis cuts back on those costs a little bit. Really, the cutback in costs is under compliance, monitoring, investigations, waivers, inspections, and that work effort. And in the current year's budget, there's about $645,000 designated, and the HF&H fee analysis brings it down to $365,000. When we look at the details up above, like legal, advertising, professional services, and the rest of those items, I started having a little bit of challenge there in apples to apples comparisons, because even though numbers might line up, when I noticed that copying and printing, you know, goes from $104,000 to zero, this is often the type of details that is behind the analysis. You know, it's this is information that's the supporting schedules. I don't really expect professional services for SB 1383 to cost $235,000 on an ongoing basis. What that number is actually going to be is somewhat, you know, that's where we have to just implement, work through the details and see where we're going to land. I don't think copying and printing is going to be zero either. And it might be that, you know, we line up an independent contractor to mail out the postcards. And so we just pay for it all under professional services. And we don't pay for anything under copying and printing because that's the cost to the independent contractor. What it tells me here is that in these numbers, I think there's embedded a little bit of contingencies for SB 1383 expenditures. But as I mentioned to the board previously, I'm not seeing anything that really jumps out at me that says I can clearly cut this back and it's going to significantly reduce the rate recommendations. So I just wanted to make sure to provide your board with as best of a detailed analysis as I could come up with. And when I start getting to the point where some of these details aren't really great apples and apples comparisons, then I feel like I've gotten to that level of detail. Certainly, I'm sharing with your board everything that I have come to understand. And I think that, again, I think in sort of some of these SB 1383 expenditures, we probably have a little bit of built-in contingencies here, but just not significant. And then moving to Exhibit B then is the one that will help sort of explain the big picture on the rate increases. So for example, Barbara, the highlighting the SB 1383 expenditures, we see that those originally in our base year comparison, the budget 2021 before SB 1383, there was nothing. In the current year's budget, it's budgeted at 1.5 million. The HF&H analysis has taken it down to about 1.2 million. And we all have the hope that we're going to be able to manage that a little bit better. In speaking to the deficits, Barbara, if you could, highlight right there. So the 2021 budgeted deficit was 686,000. The actual deficit came in at 483,000. And so there's about a $200,000 better than bad. You know, all those deficits aren't good, but at least it came in better than the bad that was expected. And in order to capture that $200,000 better than bad, what we see in the three line items for administration, HHW program expenditures, and public outreach and education, if you could maybe arrow those, Barbara, is a combined reduction of around $200,000. And a lot of that's in administration and public outreach and education, more reflective of actual expenditures for budget 2021 rather than budgeted expenditures, with the one increase then going into HHW program expenditures. And so again, recognizing that there was significant deficits in the budget in 2021, that's been addressed in part for the need for a rate increase and then in part for reducing expenditures that were prior programs or, you know, that budget plan that existed prior to SB 1383. So I like the fact that those details were scrutinized and those numbers were brought back down. Now, in terms of the current year, to the left, Barbara, what we have budgeted for the current year is about a $1.1 million deficit. And with the budget freeze, our current estimate is going to be, we're going to do a little bit better and have a deficit of about $40,000 better or so. With the grant revenues that we applied for, hopefully those numbers are going to be better. And often year-end actual is slightly better than mid-year budget projections, because we always try to be a little bit conservative. But again, significant existing deficits that have to be structural deficits that have to be addressed even after cost-cutting measures for prior programs. And then lastly, where you were going to go, Barbara, where this shows us what we're doing in terms of building the reserves back up. The first year, next fiscal year, would be a relatively modest replenishment of the reserves because of the level of capital expenditures that are identified. And then in year two and year three, the reserves would come up more. Altogether, though, the reserves over the three-year period will only replenish about one half of the reserves that had been drawn down this year and last year. And that rebuilding of the reserves, I think the board is well aware, is the reduction to the 25% target in your recently adopted reserve policy. From there, I just want to make a couple of notes, and then we'll go to Exhibit C. And the couple of notes are, in the fiscal impact section of the staff report, we identify that going from 2% to 5.4% is a 3.4% increase that can be anticipated in customer bills. In comparison, inflation for this last year was 4.7% in the United States. But of course, your participating agencies are going to be facing other costs associated with waste management. That's a result of increases in costs that the haulers are facing, independent of IWMA. Also, for customers who IWMA fees are 30 cents per month because they have bills of less than $50 per month, when we consider that, the rate increases for those portions of hauler operations are going to be more like 4 to 4.5% on average, and maybe as high as 5% relating to some. Numerically, out of every 0.1% of the proposed fees, it corresponds to about $55,000 to $60,000 in annual costs. So to reduce the fees from 5.4% to 5% would require annual reductions in the budget of about $220,000 to $240,000 per year. And I wanted to provide your board with sort of that numerical number as a just as a gauge or a barometer of what we're looking at. And then lastly, Barbara had flipped to Exhibit C. And what I wanted to do there was simply make sure to document the direction that the board has previously provided, because understanding that in a type of a fee increase like this, we would like the best and best perfect level of precision as we possibly could have. SB 1383's implementation, and all things considered, we're not at that perfect level of precision. And so we have a number of board actions in order to really help and make sure we manage this as best as we can. The HF&H management and budget review, which is ongoing, they've also been the board's authorized alternative fee calculations. At the last board meeting, we discussed and got, you know, general direction from the board to also evaluate an option based on net hauler receipts. The fee setting policy requirements are in here, but they will also require plenty of to-dos moving forward. One of the big ones is request for professional services and getting the RFPs out there. And some of the thoughts that we're having right now are not to have one big RFP, but to, you know, break them out between classroom and school education, business outreach, monitoring education, HHW, but really more to come to your board as we move forward on RFPs. And then the 2020, the budget development itself, talking about goals and metrics. In April, I would hope to, no, in May, we want to go through the third quarter budget review. And of course, June, we'll be back with the preliminary budget. So there's still plenty of work to be done. The fee recommendations right now are really based on the best information we have available. I think there's been a lot of analysis that's evolved over the last year pretty significantly. And of course, I want to share the Exhibit C in case there's additional direction that your board would want to provide at this time. And with that, I conclude my remarks and be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, board member questions. Well, I've got a couple. I'm glad you mentioned the printing and copying because I didn't understand how we would spend $100,000 on that and it would go to zero.
Yeah.
So you're saying it could be incorporated into services. Okay, got it. And then on the first table you, which is on page 62 of the agenda, I like to have on the bottom line, you talked about, okay, this is the the three components of driving the need for the rate increase, one being the SB 1383 requirement, which is, I think, is what we most commonly refer to when we talk about this rate increase, is that it being driven by 1383. You explain the prior program's deficit. The capital outlays, though, you show here on this slide in the lower right as being $435,000. What do we anticipate that to be on an ongoing annual basis? Is that roughly in that neighborhood, or what have, or
so what are we looking this at? Is for capital outlay and reserves. And so it's okay. Really in the first year, next fiscal year, that well over $300,000 is anticipated. One was the deferral of the HHW at San Miguel, but also the foundation of the building that IWA owns. There's a structural engineer who's come in and looked at it and clearly found it as being deficient. Next month, when we start talking about budget goals, I'll start talking about the need to take next steps with regard to the structural deficiency in that building. But most of it all, and Barbara, maybe you can go back to Exhibit B. Yeah, where we have the capital outlay expenses of $385,000 anticipated for next year and only $62,000 in building up reserves. Mm-hmm. But in subsequent years, it's going to mostly be building up reserves. And with that estimate of $435,000, that means in 23, 24, we've probably got about $100,000 for capital outlay. And then in 24, 25, less than that. And certainly when we start talking about the budget, and then I'll start laying out future years as well.
Okay. What I wanted to be clear on in asking that question is that as we move forward from year to year, we may have capital outlays, and then in another year, you might not have much in the way of capital outlays. And so once we achieve the desired reserve level set by our policy, we could end up with years where we, with this revenue, we could be adding to our reserves above our reserve requirement. We can always temporarily reduce the rate, correct? I mean, in other words, 3 or 4 years from now, things are good. We could say, hey, for the next year, the rate's not 5.4, it's, 5.1 or whatever. And lowering rates would never impose a 218 requirement on, or a 218 burden on jurisdictions going through that process, right?
You don't have to do a 218 if you're reducing rates.
Exactly. So my point is this, if you see the impact, in the deficit for this year, et cetera, we at some point would run out of money if we don't adopt a rate increase. And we might, look at some of these numbers and say, could that be a little less, or could this be a little more, et cetera. But the bottom line is in the future, we could delay, we could potentially reduce rates if we achieve our reserve goals. And it's incumbent upon all of us as representing our jurisdictions to always strive for this body to be as efficiently run as possible and not just, spend a certain amount of money because we have a certain amount of revenue. But we've got to have enough revenue to keep the train moving and to comply with 1383 and ensure we have a reasonable amount of reserves. So, okay, any questions from the board regarding the numbers here or what we're doing, which is we're being asked to approve a rate increase to 5.4% for the hauler fee. Jan.
Yeah, Paavo, I just like going to Exhibit C again, please, Barbara. And see if she can get back to Exhibit C. There you go. No, I'm sorry. When we were talking about a 5.4, there we go. Where is that? There you go. Right. I just want to ask Paavo to clarify. There's been some confusion, and I want to make sure that we all understand that the 5.4% is not a 5.4% increase over the present fees. So could you just explain that? Because I'm not sure of
constituents has been reduced by that.
That is correct. So the existing fee is 2% for businesses and residential properties who pay more than pay $50 a month or more. And so it's going from 2 to 5.4% or an increase of, you know, well, numerical increase of 3.4%. You know, our actual percentage of IWMA revenues is going to go up, you know, much more significantly. It's like an increase in the 50% or so of magnitude, but this really translates, you know, as an approximation of customer bills, right? It's a 3.4% impact on most customer bills. And then those customers who are only paying the 30 cents per month right now, the impact is more than the 3.4% increase because the nature of the fee is changing for them. And their increase would be more in the 4 to 4.5% range, with some of them even being maybe as high as 5%.
Thank you. Just to clarify that it's not a percentage increase over the present rate. It has to do with setting a whole new.
Right. And I would, you know, remind everybody that in you're speaking to your constituents that, I mean, this is the IWMA fee imposed on haulers, which in almost certainly be passed on to ratepayers in your jurisdiction. Each of your jurisdictions will be negotiating with your hauler for rate increases relative to their increased expenses of implementing 1383. So your residents are going to ultimately see more substantial rate increases because this is only a component of the rate increases they'll see. But that's going to be up to your jurisdiction's negotiations with your haulers.
If I might add one, when HF&H was helping with the franchise agreement review, one of the points that's important is that they're recommending that the franchise agreements, to the extent that IWMA might reduce its fee, that reduced fee is passed on then to each of the communities and their constituents.
Right.
My understanding is that that is being incorporated. And I have not had as extensive discussions with the haulers as HF&H and the franchise team, but the discussions that I have had have confirmed that modification is also going to be included in the franchise agreement, so that if IWMA has a fee reduction, then it will be passed on to your communities and your ratepayers.
All right. Let's see if there's any more board questions or comments or questions at right this point in time before we go to public comment. Any questions from board members for Pablo? Okay. If not, we will go out to public comment. And I want to mention that we did receive some thoughtful commentary from Mr. Jeff Carr in Paso Robles. I assume all of you received that email. Barbara, let's go out and see if we have any public comment on agenda item number 11. And for the public, if you do comment, you can comment on the fee setting policy, the 1383 action plan, or the rate resolution.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. And I don't have anybody for public comment.
All right, thank you. In that case, I'll bring it back to the board for any further discussion and then a motion. Do we have any further discussion by board members? Any comments that were, you know, because you didn't have a question, but you'd like to make a comment? Or we can go straight to a motion and if necessary, discuss the motion. Okay, looking for a motion that addresses all three of the specific items here on for agenda item number 11.
This is Keith. I will move a motion adoption of resolution 2022-03-03 establishing a fee setting policy. Also to adopt SB 1383 action plan dated March 2nd, 2022, and also adopt resolution number 2022-0304 amending the establishment of solid waste management fees.
I'll second.
All right.
Jeff Heller.
Okay. Got a motion by Keith Stork and a second by Jeff Heller. John, you have your hand raised.
Not now. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if you were just trying to second or if you wanted to discuss. Okay, do we have any discussion of the motion? Okay, if not, we will go ahead and call the roll.
Mr. Storkin?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Burgess?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, thank you. Then we will move on to agenda item number 12, review and approve the recruitment documents and adjust compensation for executive director position. Note, Mr. Ogren is leaving the room on this and all related items in the event that he chooses to apply for the position. He, you know, shouldn't be part of our discussions and deliberations, although this is a open to the public item, so everybody's free to listen in. So, Mr. Minery.
Thank you, President Barreau, directors of the board. Today you have with item 12, a draft brochure for the executive director position. This is prepared by Mr. Bill Avery and Associates. This has been reviewed and there was input provided by the executive committee. And so essentially what you're looking at here today is an advertisement for the position of executive director. As part of this action item, your board will need to, in open session here today, determine the compensation for the executive director. The proposed compensation as identified in this marketing brochure is upward of up to $170,000 annually, plus benefits as negotiated. The standard benefits for IWMA employees are included in the last page of the brochure. So with that, I will answer any questions or leave it for board discussion.
Okay. Do we have any board questions regarding the brochure or the action requested? Because I believe, if I recall correctly, Jeff, that if the board, you know, approves this advertisement, Mr. Avery will get it out this week.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah.
And so I would suggest that any motion be to approve the brochure, if that is your desire, and also to establish the compensation at up to $170,000 plus benefits as identified in the brochure.
Are there any questions on either the brochure or any or comments on the brochure or the compensation level? I know we broached the subject on in closed session, so, but as Jeff Minery noted, we have to vote on it in open session.
Public comment.
Yeah, we'll go to public comment, but first let's see Mr. Heller.
Yes, for the purpose of educating the public, can you explain a little bit about how this compensation level was suggested?
Would you like me to do that?
Sure.
Thank you. Yes, as part of the recruitment effort when Mr. Avery was engaged in November of 2021, one of the first tasks that your board requested of Mr. Avery was to conduct a salary survey. Mr. Avery did look at various salaries and compensation levels in and outside of the area. Of course, the IWMA is a bit unique in its provisions of services within the community, but certainly attention was given to what it takes to run an agency with this size and of similar budgets. And the amount presented to the board is essentially what with consultation of Mr. Avery and the input of the executive committee, to be a fair and attractive compensation for an agency this size, similar in kind to a director head director position at the county. I said that right.
Department head. I appreciate it.
Department head.
Yeah, I think it was deputy.
Deputy department head. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, okay. Then we will proceed to public comments. See if there's any public comment on this item.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I have nobody for public comment.
Okay, all right, thank you. We'll bring it back to the board for motion, and then if necessary, discussion.
Charles, John Hammond would like to go ahead and approve the brochure and get it out for.
Okay.
And the salary.
And the salary.
Yeah, and you approve the salary, the up to salary?
Yes.
Okay. So motion by John Hammond. Do we have a second?
Jeff Heller, Morbay, second.
Okay, I think Robert beat you there by a millisecond there, Jeff.
Bye.
So we're going to take a motion by John Hammond, a second by Robert. And do any discussion of the motion? All right, if not, we will call the roll, please.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Robert.
Yes.
Mr. Burgess.
Yes.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, thank you. So we will have an advertisement out by the end of the week, it looks like.
I will coordinate with Mr. Avery.
Okay, so that completes the scheduled agenda items. Going to turn back over to Paavo for discussion of the interim executive director's report and future agenda items.
Well, the interim executive director does not have much more to report since the preponderance of my time has been on fee setting policies and the fee analysis and the actual agenda items. But in talking with staff, one of the things that we will be working on for normal inclusion at this part in time of the agenda is some of the metrics on how we're doing. So those will be coming up. With respect to, you know, the next board items, though, is really next meeting, we want to start talking about how to approach the RFPs for professional services and start some of our goal setting and some of our budget discussions. AB 1276, it was originally going to be on this agenda, but considering the number of items that were significant, that's an informational item only. And so we'll have a brief discussion next month on that one as well. And those are the three things that we've currently got slated for the next meeting. And of course, any other direction from your board, this would be a good time to talk.
I think the list is good there. So some of the ones you didn't mention, you know, those will come on like, let's say May or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Keith, you have a question.
Actually, I don't have a question. I just have a couple of comments I'd like to make. I think today was a pretty significant meeting given the fact where we were last summer and where we are now. A lot of work has done to get us to this point. So I just want to give a couple of thank yous, Charles, for leading us during this time. I feel like we're on a good path moving forward, and taking on the direction in your position was really important. And I just wanted to appreciate your ability to guide us. But I also just want to provide just a shout out to the staff that is working very hard day to day. We meet once or twice a month for the people on the executive committee, but the staff is really working hard, particularly during these changes that we've had to adapt to over the last several months. So just kind of a thank you to Patty for her leadership during this time, and Kelly and Barbara and Sasha and Yvonne and Paavo, you really came in at a critical time, and just appreciate you on taking a lot of the bulk of this work and helping us move forward. And just a thank you to Jeff and his work on the JPA And I just feel like we're in a really good place moving forward. And I personally want to thank the board just for the work that we've done together as a team and moving forward. And I really want to give a shout out to John Hammond, who I think initially was cautious and skeptical, but he's been on this board for a long time and really provided us with some leadership. And I really do appreciate him hanging in there. And I wish the county would have hung in there. I think it would have been better overall for all of us and our citizens as far as the costs that this will be for all of us moving forward. I hate to see the duplicity of services, but I really think we are bound to be successful. We're solidified. I appreciate the accountability, the transparency, and just our plan moving forward. So those are the comments I wanted to make. I just really am thankful and I'm glad we're in a good place. So thank you to everybody.
Thank you, Keith. Jeff.
Yes, I would like to echo Director Storton's comments. I think we're in a position now that is just a remarkable recovery, which has happened very quickly. Pavel, thank you for your leadership. Charles Barbeau and the executive committee, Jeff Minnery, staff. I'm really impressed with the quality of the agenda items, their clarity, and how quickly this has been developed. And I'm feeling extremely confident that the IWMA is going to move into the future on a really great note, a solid footing. And I want to thank you all for that. Very much appreciate your work.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other questions? Any questions for Pavel or any further comments?
Well, I'd like to say something. Oh. No, I just want to say I think Keith Storton was very eloquent, and I agree with everything that you said. And I also just want to comment on there were times in the past year where we've had to pedal pretty hard and pretty fast and be resilient and pivot, as they say, and deal with COVID and all that. And so I think so far we've done a great job, and I'm just really interested in the next phase once we get launched. So that's all.
Okay. Thank you, Jan. Okay, if there's no further comments, then I believe we are ready to adjourn. Does anybody have anything further for the good of the cause? I'm looking over here, gentlemen. Okay, if not, thank you all. I think, as Keith said, this was an important meeting. Obviously, two very big issues, the JPA amendment and the rate increase. So hopefully those will work out well. So, all right, thank you, everybody, and we will see you next month, if not sooner.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, everybody.